Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Heroic Stats and Any Heroics podcast. My name's Stephen, and today we've got quite a full house. In terms of podcast members, we're only missing one, so maybe next week we'll have everyone here. I am, of course, Stephen Denby. I'm the rankings officer for the GBHL slash pseudo team captain for Any Heroics, although we are an elective democracy, as I will maintain at all times. I'm here with John Partridge, our commission intern who cannot spell,
Woo!
but he's done that on purpose. Elliot, who loves Rohan, of course. And we've got Dave, farmer. You've probably heard of him, pretty good at the game.
Dave.
And Jordan, watcher player extraordinaire.
Not anymore.
Say hi, everyone.
Hi,
Hi,
everyone.
everyone.
Hi, everyone.
That's
Hi,
what I
everyone.
wanted from that. Lovely. So, first of all, if you're new here, probably go back and listen to episode one. But we are here to talk about the events of the past weekend, specifically the GBHL events of the past weekend. Any competitive ongoings at those, results, whatnot, best painted, most sporting, etc. We'll also briefly dive into bits of meta discussion in general and also at the tournaments themselves. So first of all, bit of hobby discussion. I think we've all got something that we're working on at the moment, haven't we?
Amazing.
I'm of course working on my Thranduil's halls, finally using those generation shift bases I mentioned last week. They are glorious.
Been cooking.
I've been cooking. I've also been trying to work out what to take to a future 700 points list. Someone in this chat knows I'm potentially taking something really, really, really stupid.
Is
You
it
know who you are.
Goglad?
No, I said stupid, not epic. John, what are you up to? Hopefully painting my Easterlings.
Yeah, so I'm working on Arnor, who are plodding along very slowly, but I have, like Stephen alluded to, been working on my first painting commission, technically, which will be Easterlings for Stephen. I converted up a Dragon Knight, which you can see on screen now. And then
Looks
need to
beautiful,
paint
John.
some other bits and bobs for him. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing,
Yeah.
converting and painting Arnor.
Lovely. That's a beautiful work. Elliot, any are you still working on what's that shit dwarf hero? Mardy?
Mardy? There's no shit
Marthy?
dwarf heroes. That's a trick
I
question.
finished Mardin a while back. I've been painting shit tons of Iron Guard. Got them falling out my arse at the moment. So I
I
think I've
love
probably
Iron
painted
Guard,
like
to be
three
fair.
in the last
I
week.
really
Honestly, they
like
fit
their
rather nicely.
aesthetic. They're a nice set of miniatures, to be honest.
Yeah, I
They
think they're very cool. Very
are.
iconic.
They're very different to even the other Durin's. Actually, that's not quite true. I really like the Durin's folk because they're basically just from the Lord of the Rings era. They've just grabbed Gimli and they're like, right, that's literally the one thing they have.
Let's
And
run with this.
that scene at the start with the Dwarf Lords picking up the rings. That's literally all they had to go on. So they just created a whole range. And for me, I think it looks really good. That's why I own none of it, not a single miniature.
Dave, what are you up to at the moment, hobby-wise?
I was doing this when I was having my trouble connecting to the podcast just like about 10 minutes ago. I was boiling some water because I've been building my Guards of Glafrum Court and I needed to straighten out some resin pikes that were bendy and awkward. I was sent you a pic of those earlier, but I love these. The
Is that the new Forge World sculpts?
No,
No, they're
because
the
they're disgusting.
I don't think they're disgusting. They're just sort of fine, average, I would say. Whereas the fine casts, and they were metal before that, but good luck getting them in metal. Guards of the Glafrum Court, they're lovely models. They have such
I
great
find
poses as well.
a hairdryer works quite well as well. It's quite satisfying to watch
Yeah,
them
but
bend into place.
shockingly, I don't own a hairdryer, Jordan. I make do with.
What
To be
about a
fair.
bowling ball waxing machine?
Boiling water works really well. Specifically for pikes, you dip them in, you pull them straight, and you pour them under the cold tap. They immediately stay in place. They don't go back. That's all.
Elliot, for those audio listeners who will not have noticed, just had a laughing fit, so hardly had to mute himself. So that's what we're here for. Good crack. Jordan, what are you up to? You still on the
Well, other than
blowjobbies?
being at the opposite end of the hair spectrum to Dave, yeah, I'm still working on some Haradin Serpent Horde. Yeah, just ticking over lots of contrast paints.
Between the two
Nothing
of us, we
particularly
have one
exciting.
head of hair.
I would say that me and Dave are probably polar opposites, because he has good beard, I have non-existent beard, and he has non-existent hair, and I'm
To
not going
be
to call
fair,
it good
your heads are
hair.
almost like reversed, aren't
Yeah,
they?
exactly. Just turned it upside down. So yeah, we've all got a few little projects coming on. We might have some videos of those coming up at some point, maybe. Firstly, though, before we get into the results of last weekend, a word from our legitimate actual sponsors.
I bought this from Firestorm Games.
I bought this from Firestorm Games.
I bought these from Firestorm Games.
We're very, very proud here at AnyHeroics to be affiliated with Firestorm Games. So when I first got into the hobby a couple of years ago, and I bought myself the Battle of Pelennor Fields box and some Order Orcs and a handful of paints, it was from this site. I spoke to a couple of guys at the staff there, and they were very, very helpful and gave me everything I needed to get into the hobby. It's a fantastic place to get your stuff. Most of it's already discounted from the Games Workshop rates, so buying it here is going to be way cheaper than getting yourself direct. They don't just do MESBG, they've got 40k, AOS, Magic the Gathering, any other board games you can think of. If believe you and me, it's there. It's just such an amazing shop, and we're really, really proud to be affiliated. They do nationwide delivery, and you can use our link below to get any of the stuff you need and have an explore for yourself. Back to the pod.
So as you will just have seen, we are officially now sponsored by the lovely Firestorm Games down in Cardiff. A big shout out to them. They're actually one of the reasons that we're a team together, really, because we Into the West was where we basically poached John. I messaged him being like, oh, you're going to this event? I haven't spoken to you in 10 years, but you know. Me and Elliot had a lovely doubles tournament there. We also had, I want to say it was the Dragon Championships non-GBHL event. That's where we met Dave, or I met Dave for the first time. He had a lovely game against me, didn't you, Dave?
And George as well. You guys love me.
I forced you to be my friend after that. Anyone who is looking for places to buy their hobby stuff, please check out Firestorm Games. There'll be a link in the description.
It's a good gaming venue. Great gaming venue. As well.
They've also got a little cafe there. If you're ever in Cardiff, go there, because it's a nerd haven. It's well ventilated. They've got good, like, facilities for everything: food, nerd stuff. Well,
also, toilets.
Go there because we told you to, as well, not because it's good.
Yeah, we told you to do it, so do it.
Because it makes us feel good and special. Yeah. Anyway,
so moving on to Gathering at the Grey Havens, the GBHL 100. This was up in Preston. If you don't know where Preston is, no shade to Preston, but why would you know where Preston is?
It's the North End.
It's near Manchester. That's all you really need to know. The tournament organizer was Charles Sims, who's been running this event for quite a few years.
A long time. This is an old school event.
Yeah,
it's something like that. It's one of the older events that hasn't missed.
This event last year was, I think, my second ever event, my only 100 podium. It all went downhill from there.
Now, I might be talking shit about this, but this is one of the only events that hasn't missed a year, because this was one of the first events that came back after COVID, and I think it still happened in 2020, although I'm not quite sure about that, actually.
That's a very interesting bit of trivia, thank you.
I also might be wrong, so.
There's 701 points and six games, with a total of 84 players attending.
I always like a 701 point event. Like, I like that little, you know, it's an extra shield here, it's a spear there, it's a bow, you know, it's silly.
This is a this is a specific, so he actually mentioned why this was in the description of the event. He traditionally Charles has done the opposite of this, where he's gone like 699 or slightly under 700, because he felt like Smaug shouldn't be played. But this time he made a big song and dance about saying this is the year that Smaug is playable at Grey Havens, and he bumped it up to slightly over 700 so that people could play Smaug, and I think a couple of people did. I remember Ali telling me he played against a Smaug player, which is fun. I don't think Smaug is super competitive, but it's certainly a bit of a cock block list against certain armies.
Smaug is a very cool model. He will auto lose some scenarios and almost auto win some others. Most sporting was, insert name of most sporting player here. We don't actually have this information, unfortunately, right at recording time, but hopefully by the time this goes up, we will have it. Congratulations to whoever you are for being a lovely person.
Yeah, big up.
Goddamn right.
Most sporting, I think, is one of the most important prizes you can give at an event, because it's really important to recognize those people who are the lovely ones in the community, who, you know, keep everyone smiling, even if you have a miserable game and then you have a great one afterwards and you're like, you know what? Yeah, you've improved my weekend a lot. You deserve
it's nice
my
to
vote.
See people that are good at rugby and also good at Middle Earth strategy battle game.
Ha. Huh. This is we also don't know who Best Painted was. John and I kind of let ourselves down with this one, but we do have pictures of.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how we got the pictures, but not the name. But
I thought you were going to say pictures of the guy.
Part of me is like, hey, this is very Dan Scott inspired Easterlings Khand. This is really cool.
I'm about the chariots a lot.
Yeah,
very cool.
There's a war priest on chariot. There's a few Easterlings on chariot with bows.
He's got the cataphract horses as well, which is cool.
Yeah, but again, this is a lot of effort put into this one. Honestly, I really want to say this is Dan Scott again, but I don't know if it is. I don't think it is.
It doesn't look the same paint scheme, so...
No.
Looks a bit like yours, Jordan.
Yeah. A lot of cool conversion work done on these chariots.
Yeah, very nice.
It's been very nice work.
So, looking at our podium lists, there was a dead draw for third place. I think it came right down to a kind of on the fly tiebreaker of who got the most sporting votes. But we thought both players did exactly the same in terms of gaming. So we wanted to kind of cover both people. So we've got a Goblin Town and Dark Denizens list from Mr. Pete Harvey. He's got the King, Gollum, 17 goblins, Grinner, 12 goblins, 3 goblin captains with 10 goblins each, with one with 11, and then the Spider Queen and a Bat Swarm. And then Ian's list is a list that I really like the look of, Arnor, Khazad-dûm, and the Misty Mountains. So Arvedui leading some Warriors of Arnor and some Rangers, Malbeth leading some Warriors of Arnor, 3 Hobbit Archers and a Ranger, and then a Dwarf King for that kind of cheap march hero of valor, leading 8 Khazad Guard, 2 Dwarfs of Shield, and then the second best big flappy boy in the game, Gwaihir, or my second favorite.
The first best flappy boy in the game being John's labia.
I
was not expecting that.
So for context, did we mention, so Pete Harvey missed out off of most sporting votes. I think Ian had one more, which is extremely close. And you know, Pete's a lovely guy, so that's no shade to him. They both had votes. I think Ian had one more. Ian's a lovely guy as well, for the record. He's great crack. But so Goblin Town and Spider Queen, I mean, that's very much kind of a standard list. 550 with Goblin Town with the one with the 150 points that is the Spider Queen and the Bat Swarm dropped in. I like the list ish. I'm not a huge, like, the Spider Queen adds so many tools to a Goblin Town list. You can get a lot in there. It's worth noting he's gone for 3 captains. He doesn't have a mercenary warband, which is one of the things you might have. He doesn't have a scribe. And part of that is when you do the Yellow Alliance thing, the numbers get a bit awkward. So you might notice that he's got almost full warbands. I think he could have up to 5 more goblins, but that's it. Or he could take stuff in his Spider Queen's warband, but that's obviously a bit more expensive, like the wargs and stuff, which, I mean, I would consider that, by the way. I think fell wargs are a good choice. But if you're going to take a mercenary captain, you then have to have an awkwardly large mercenary warband, which can be bad on certain boards because you have to deploy them in terrain. And some
you
terrain
also
pieces.
Have to take a Valor from that list, right?
Well, yeah, but
the Goblin King.
Huh?
King's a legend.
You're not gonna.
Oh wait, is
not...
Goblin? Is Goblin Town? Is huh? A mercenary is part of Goblin Town?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Jesus Christ!
Oh my God, Stephen.
Get good.
Embarrassing.
I think this list is like the Spider Queen is really solid.
Yeah.
But it's only, I say only 68 models. It's only
it feels,
68
it feels
goblins.
Small.
And they from experience, I've used Goblin Town a lot. They do die really quick.
They do.
I know,
but
you've got the
68,
Spider Queen in there.
68.
But you see, like.
Well,
sorry, Dave,
you go.
You see, like, 68 model Goblin Towns at like 550, 600 points.
Mm.
The numbers feel small. Maybe that's just the Spider Queen added in there.
Yeah, I mean, the Spider Queen adds an awful lot. Spider Queen and a Bat Swarm, no less, as well. So the Spider Queen will win you a lot of games that Goblin Town can't win otherwise.
Yeah.
Do you think, as well, you could have just got a two handed weapon on one of those goblins just for the extra point?
Yeah, I think it's offensive to me that Pete didn't.
Why would you not do that argument?
So for my, I'm taking Goblin Town to a 650.
I don't want
to
hear it, John.
That's inconvenient.
I've got 86 of them. I think the list would be better if I switched two mercs into two-handed goblins. However, doing that means I'd have to differentiate those two goblins
so
from the 75 other
goblins
that I've got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If my opponent has a loom band, this guy's got a two-handed weapon.
I already use loom bands on the captains because they get lost.
Oh, John. That's a you problem, bud.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The quality of life thing for the Goblin Town player.
So moving back to the lists.
Yeah.
I mean, Goblin Town, as long as Lords of Battle doesn't come up, or to the death. I mean, it's not the worst to the death. As long as Lords of Battle doesn't come up.
It doesn't have a banner, though, is the problem.
Yeah. I mean, to the death is not ideal, but Lords of Battle is worse.
Yeah, I don't know which. He went 5-1, so I don't know which round he lost.
We could look at Longshanks. In fact, I will look at Longshanks while you guys carry on.
What do we think of Ian's list?
I like it, but also it's a bit of a Frankenstein's monster. I think it could probably be. It's a pretty hard. He's trimmed all of the fat out of this pretty effectively. I'm never quite sure about the list's idea. What's it trying to get at? The point of this list is he wants a good amount of D6 or higher semi-elite troops. He wants March. He wants a striker. He wants Gwaihir. So Gwaihir is the key point in this list. For me, the bit that almost doesn't make sense is Malbeth. Like, because Malbeth is good and brings more worries of Arnor, but Malbeth save
of them.
Yeah, you sort of don't get the criticality, especially if you're dropping hobbits in. That's the other thing. For me, the more hobbits you have, the less effective Malbeth is. I mean, he's only got, other than Arbor Dewey, he's got
22 guys plus Arbor Dewey,
guys,
you can get Malbeth saves.
And Malbeth himself, obviously, which is like about half of his army, which it's not useless. And I think maybe I'm underselling it, but I think the list could be maybe a little stronger in that regard, a little bit more focused. But I mean, Dwarf Kings are an excellent drop alliance, especially with stuff like Gwaihir, especially with stuff like Arbor Dewey. Like, Ali really rates the idea of like Durin and Arbor Dewey and a Dwarf King as a combo, because you can get all of the really effective pieces from, basically because Khazad Dûm don't have a great alliance matrix. You get all the effective pieces from Khazad Dûm. You get the cheap Khazad Guard, you get the really effective Iron Guard, strength 4, fight 4 troops, and then you can say, right, we need spears for this. Arbor Dewey is a hero of valor. He's cheap, he's effective, he's a 3-attack striker. And he has he can lead 15 boys.
And I guess if he's not tied to being your leader as well, then you can actually
He's a pretty effective hero for 80 points. He's pretty good. Obviously Gwaihir is the leader here. Dwarf Kings are also effective, so it kind of all adds up together. It makes quite an effective combo. I don't know. I don't know if swapping Malbeth for something else would be better, or it would be just more compromised, because I think he's already really towing the line on numbers. Like, getting this up to nearly 40 models, he's got 39. That was the thing that impressed me, because every list I've ever written with Gwaihir in it below 800 struggles with numbers pretty heavily.
So now I guess
Lake Town is killed anyway. As an
ally. It's worth noting that for both of these lists, they both lost to the eventual winner of the event. we will see in a moment. List lost in assassination.
Assassination, right.
And the Arnor soup lost in domination.
Interesting.
So I understand the assassination one definitely, because when you've got that many goblin captains to watch out for,
That's when John takes the loom bands off.
And also the Spider Queen in Assassination is both an excellent tool, but also an excellent target. Because
yeah, to a degree, yes, that's true. With stuff like heroic accuracy and shooting, it's pretty hard to like. I mean, if you're against I once played a Legolas versus a Spider Queen Assassination, and it's like
crossbows.
There's no point being coy because it's literally just 3 points, you know.
Yeah,
Spider Queen can't save it. So,
shall anyway, we move on to the second place list?
Congratulations to Ian, the third place.
So our silver medalist was Jack Thirlbeck. He brought Halls of Thranduil and Survivors of Lake Town. So he's got 36 models, 12 bow. He's bringing Thran Daddy himself on foot with heavy armor, an additional Elven made sword, and a circlet of kings. He's leading 6 Mirkwood Elves with shield, 4 with elf bow and glaive, 1 with a banner and glaive, 2 palace guard with spear and shield, 1 Mirkwood Cav, 1 sentinel. Then he's got Leggy on a horse with 5 more Mirkwood Elves with shield, 3 elves with bow and glaive, 1 more Mirkwood Cav, and then he's got a Lake Town Militia captain to bulk up the numbers, leading 5 Lake Town Militia with shield and spear, 1 Lake Town Militia with spear, and 3 Lake Town Militia with bow and spear.
I really like this list. I think it's got a lot of interesting tools. So the Mirkwood section brings a bit of Cav mobility, high fight value, bodyguard, a sentinel, and good shooting. And obviously you've got Legolas. Thranduil's an absolute monster for shredding troops. And then the cheeky little Survivors of Lake Town drop, where you've got March and, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10 models for just over 100 points.
Yeah. So
it's very nice.
This is like almost exactly how I would build this. For me, basically the only thing that I don't like in this list is I don't like the shield on the Lake Town Militia captain. I think it's pointless. I think 5 points, you just get another Lake Town Militia in. Because I think every number you can increase is valuable, and that wouldn't even get you a break point. But I still think it's worth it. Or you could use those 5 points to upgrade, like give your Lake Town Militia who doesn't have a shield, and then turn one of the shield guys into a palace guard or something. I think
that
works.
The glaives.
Mirkwood
Elves.
Or you could whack a couple of glaives on shield guys. Yeah, just something.
I do
to spend
disagree
the
with a shield point. I think once the militia captain has done its 2 points of might, if you suddenly got a, albeit fight three hero with pseudo 4 attacks to just hold somewhere,
I don't think it matters. You've got glaives to support him. Like 5 points on a shield on a hero like that isn't almost never worth it for my money. Like orc captains, don't give them shields. I think it's worth it.
How valuable do we think the Circlet of Kings is? Because theoretically it is.
Oh, I think the Circle of Kings is very
good. Really
good. It gives you a lot of control.
Just for the terror alone is like, here we go.
That spell always being up is amazing. And Nature's Wrath for free once per game is not nothing to be sniffed at either, especially considering it's a 6.
It lets you, the one turn you win the move or you win the priority, you set everything up and then you go, okay, I can either target your hero to, I mean, realistically, you don't want to be hitting a hero, but you can pick a bubble and be like, cool, I've now got +1 to wound. You're knocked down. I could 2-hand to make it +2 to wound conditionally. It really lets you just, because having played against Halls of Thranduil a couple of times, it lets you just go, cool, this little 3-inch radius bit, that is now going to be under my control. For this turn.
Exactly.
Even the fact you've got to think about where Thranduil is going to go just because you know he can do that is a play point. You can use Thranduil almost as like a guess where he's going to end up, and then you have to kind of put your heroes in certain places to try and get a will to resist it.
Blitzcrank effect from League of Legends, where the threat of the ability is almost as important as the ability itself.
I would say
you're going to get more Blitzkrieg there, which is a very different point of history rather than game.
If I'm wishlisting for this, I think I'd like Thranduil to have a horse as well. Because you don't have to use it. You don't have to play around him being on a horse. I think the ability to reposition him for stuff is so important, especially since his main effect is... Like, I fully understand why people don't prioritize the horse because it's 10 points, or because people sort of feel like the elk is important. I don't like the elk. I think the base is
well,
too big.
It's the elven made blade, isn't it? The additional sword that makes you stop.
That's what I was going
to
say. Are you swapping the sword for the horse?
No, absolutely not.
The horse is literally a 10-point mobility upgrade. It's like taking ponies on your Thorin's company. It's just to get you where you want to go. And especially since I was already saying I feel like the shield on the militia captain can go away. I would honestly, if I drop that, I would also be comfortable dropping the shields on the Lake Town militia and giving him a horse. But also, this thing not having blinding light, I can see why you might want the shields on the militia.
Well, I guess he could always run up, drop an anxious wrath, and then dismount.
If you want to dismount, that's always an option. But for me, a mounted fight 7 hero is never, even though you don't get the benefit of the extra attacks, like
you get the
starting
knockdown.
From yeah, you get knocked down if you want it. It's just the options. Like I would always
still 3 attacks, fight 7 on the horse.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just you don't get the extra attack for everyone in base contact. If you did, it would be unbelievably great.
There is also the argument that if you drop the Lake Town Militia shield, you can put a bow on Thranduil, which he's got a 2+ shoot value with a strength 3 bow. It's not insignificant.
If I already had the horse on him and I had 5 points left over, I would consider it. But I think usually I probably wouldn't bother. 2+ shoot value is kind of nice though, it's true.
How do we feel?
This Thranduil... Sorry, John. I think this Thranduil is what I would say the baseline for, unless you're really scrimping on points.
Agreed, the
bits that you should always put on him for, let's say, 600 points plus is those 3 bits of war gear.
Yeah.
Really good.
I really like how Jack's selected his troops as well, the way he split them out. 2 Microcav is great. A Sentinel is great. Just 2 Palace Guard is exactly right for me. I think Palace Guard are massively overpointed, but Bodyguard plus access to fight 6 is so valuable, you can't not have any.
Yeah.
I think he's done a great job with this. Yeah. And also,
that's exactly
his first
what
GBA.
I was going to ask about the Palace Guard.
It's his first GBHO 100 podium, so congrats to Jack.
Yeah.
Well done.
Congrats, Jack.
Cool. Shall we look at somebody who it's definitely not their first GBHO
podium? I don't think we need to look at this.
Okay, we'll skip straight through this one.
First place is Jay Achar. Wait, what? It's Jake Wilson with Isengard. Taking Jay Achaya's Isengard idea.
I love the pick choice.
Let's be honest, he's not taking his idea. Everyone knows that Isengard crossbows at the moment are good. It is Jake Rawson with Isengard. He's got 40 models, 15 bows, of which 14 are crossbows, I believe.
Yeah, he's got 13 crossbowmen, Vrasku, and Lurtz.
Lurtz, who has an Urukai bow.
So technically 16 shots, but Lurtz with shield is the leader. 4 Urukai warriors with crossbow. A demo team, love to see it outside of the Legion. 6 Uruk-hai warrior with pike, 1 Uruk-hai warrior with pike, shield, and banner for that excellent -2 to the dual rule.
I think. We'll come on to that in a minute, but I have opinions about that shield. I actually talked to Jake about that yesterday as well.
1 Crebane for that insane mobility. Vrasku with 5 Uruk-hai warriors with crossbow, 6 warriors with pike, and a Crebane. And last but not least, Gorroth Ironskin, one of my favorite heroes. 4 Uruk-hai warriors with crossbow, 5 warriors with pike, a wild man of Dunland.
Just throwing in for good measure.
Yeah. It's Isengard, it's crossbow spam. It's got some good mobility in the Crebane. Dave, talk us through your thoughts on the banner.
So that's 1 point left over, and there is no other thing that can be spent on that is obviously better than it. Well, I'm sorry, obviously a strong choice. Like there's no, he doesn't have any models that don't have pikes or crossbows. Neither of whom can carry shields. All I would say with that is essentially putting a shield on a model with a pike and a banner means that you've given yourself no defensive bonus and a second -1 to win the fight at all times. So he said essentially he wanted to have the access to shielding if he wanted it. And I was saying, like, I don't get that because 2 dice with -2 is worse than 1 dice with -1.
Yeah.
Like the overall result, it was, I guess it's 3 versus 2 because you have a banner reroll. I was saying to him, that is actually just objectively worse. He said basically it didn't really come up, which I'm not surprised because it's a banner. Because you don't even get the defense bonus against shooting. There's literally no purpose to it.
For those people not aware, if you have a pike and a shield, it's like having a bow and shield in that you don't get the defense bonus from the shield, but you also get a -1 to your dual roll.
Yeah, because of a pike and a shield. Unless you have the phalanx special rule,
unless you're an Easterling, baby.
There is the option to change the wild man of Dunland into an orc and give it a spear, maybe.
Yeah, that might have been better. Or I think the wild man of Dunland is a better shout. I think maybe I would just say I'll give him a weapon swap to a mace or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Or give him the two-handed... Oh, no, you didn't put this in, but he did have the two-handed axe on the wild man of Dunland as well, by the way.
Oh, he did he?
Yeah, he did. So at that point... So otherwise, I would say buying the two-handed axe is probably worth it. But because we did already have it.
That we are missing, then?
The point you're missing is the wild man of Dunland second thing.
Okay, so but it's already 701.
Is it? Oh, well, in that case, I don't know. Maybe he played a 702 point list. I'd have to double check, but I'm pretty sure on the list on Longshanks, it had that written down. If it didn't, then
it's
I would
just
say
with
that.
Axe. It just says with axe.
Yeah, so the axe is 6 points, though, because with axe, because it's an optional two-handed axe, I think. I could be reading that wrong, but that's how I read it.
Oh, tell us down below in the comments.
So, regarding the bomb, what do you think about the bomb outside of the Legion? I think it's got quite a good board control element to it.
But the bomb is crazy. I mean, like, Lurtz with the bomb in his warband is always great, because you go second, it's like, cool. If you don't screen all your warbands properly, which apparently they didn't in that round, I asked them about it, you can just be like, all right, Lurtz is coming on, he's coming on behind you, and then they can do nothing about you setting the bomb off and blowing up potentially a half of one of their warbands, assuming it actually goes off, which one out of six times it won't, but like, that's worth it for sure. So yeah, bombs are great. They basically are the perfect counter to getting right up in the face of a list like this, because you can just sit there and blast things in many scenarios, and then when they come close, you pile in with pikes and solid troops, and you can blow up scary heroes. Or even like what Jake was saying, what he was doing was he was mostly just blowing up a percentage of their army, like just get as big of a body count as possible off of the bomb explosion, and then just use the fact that you have Uruk-hai and pikes to win fights, basically. Yeah, it's a solid list. I think, unflatteringly, I might say it's not a very interesting list, in the sense that
cookie cutter Isengard, isn't it?
A little bit, although in fairness, this isn't exactly... I think this is sort of the feeling, the effect of people just... Mainly Jay has been proving since the nerf just on Helm's Deep. It's like, okay, so if we're not... We're admitting that the ballistas, without the full rerolls, are not good enough to justify taking the crappy heroes in that Legion. So now it's saying, okay, well, actually, Lurtz, Vraski, Gorulf is a really solid trio of heroes.
Yeah.
Actually... You know, even if you do take ballistas, you'd still say, all right, I'd rather have Vraskoo, I'd rather have Lurtz than a lot of that effective reroll rule. And the bomb is still good even without the guarantee that it's going to work that you get in the Legion, basically.
I guess I'd better buy some Isengard.
You've still got to play around the potential of it doing what it's meant to do, haven't you? That's a problem.
And this list is hurt a lot by a Blinding Light as well. Like, a lot. Like, if this list has to play into, like, an elf list with Blinding Light, like a Rivendell list, a pure Rivendell at 700, looks at this. If they've got 11 bows or something with Blinding Light, you'd be like, all right, mate, you can stand there with your crossbows. I'll stand here with my bows that wound you on fives, and you'll hit me. I'll hit you, and you won't hit me, and I'll just win the game that way. So those kind of lists aren't very meta, but at the same time, it's like this list has very clear weaknesses. Like, pure Lothlorien, it doesn't like either. You know,
yeah,
I'm just saying
it's also got a lot of it's only got 12, well, I suppose 12 d6 models is still pretty good, but there is a squishier, sorry, no, it's not 12 d6,
it
doesn't have
d6
any
d6 model. There are zero d6 models apart from Lurtz.
Yeah, so it would actually look at any elf list and go, oh, actually, you've got Blinding Light and you outfight me and you're winning me on fives.
I wouldn't want to get, I think, you know, if you have the bows, you wouldn't get into a fight with this at all. You'd just stand there and shoot it to death, because the pikes and the strength 4 pikes are actually amazingly good. But if you don't have to consider that, you just, you know, you pick a bit of it apart and then suddenly they're struggling with numbers.
Yeah.
This is a great list. It's like really solid, but it's not anything resembling unbeatable. I think if Blinding Light, as I keep saying, get Blinding Light in the meta and this kind of list won't work anymore.
Yeah, I think we're definitely seeing a bit of a resurgence of shooting.
I think people who've remembered that crossbows are kick-ass.
Yeah, start taking Blinding Light people, or just take 86 models and then you don't have to, doesn't matter. You kill 20 with shooting, don't care. Right, moving on. Let's look at our next tournament of the weekend. Mm-hmm. It was the Monster Mash, hosted by friend of the channel, Tom Patterson, owner extraordinaire of Atomic Cards. Check out their website as well. If you don't want to shop at Firestorm, shop at Atomic Cards. They had 18 players at their 850-point tournament playing three games. Tom added in a really cool rule to kind of make this 80 a bit more fun, a bit more unique. So players could bring one monster, which acted as a banner, and it was outside of the ally matrix. That means you could bring Gulivar with good armies, you could bring Gwahir with evil armies, and it was really kind of see what stuff cooked up. Perfect theme for an 80, really kind of fits that sort of vibe of a nice fun tournament. So that's why somebody did exactly what I would have done and took Vanquishers of the Necromancer with Gulivar. Shout out to whoever that person was.
That was Nat Sinclair.
What a villain.
I have it on good faith. Although personally, So I was chatting to Tom about this and he was like, I'm really nervous that everyone's just going to take the filthiest combinations possible. But I was looking through some of the lists, and sorry, this is a little bit of a tangent. Someone took Rangers of Mirkwood Legendary Legion with Treebeard as the ally.
Nice.
And I don't know if Tom was like, yeah, he'll count as a tree for the purposes of your special rule. I assume not, but it would be nice. In my head, Tom did do that.
Well, he's not a tree, is he? He's an Ent, so...
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah, obviously. John, you know what to cut in here.
No editing, completely
but
raw.
But yeah, we had a lot of very interesting, like, we had an army of Lake Tam with the Watcher. So there was the lake, there's the Watcher. Yeah. Lovely.
I was very excited about this event, and I was second on the reserve list, and only one person dropped out, and therefore I didn't get to go. So.
Someone did take a too many players for Legion list.
That's my gripe.
Where their main list was two Goblin Mercenary Captains with five Mercenary Goblins, and then their optional monster was Smaug. So shout out you absolute legend. That was Aaron Wright, I believe.
Winner of Best Painted. So as alluded to, Aaron got Best Painted, and Most Sporting was won by Mark Newham. Let's have a look at Aaron's fantastic Smaug. I don't know where the Goblin Mercs are, but I mean, Smaug's the star of the show here. So it's, I think, the second pod in a row we've had Smaug on.
Yeah.
Fantastic paint job. The flames, I don't know how he has done the flames, but they're really good. I don't know whether there's like an LED inside or whether it's just fantastic painting.
It might be one really of those ones where he's gotten like, oh, it looks like it can be removed, I assume, from the top right picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some really stunning work.
I actually really like the kind of marble effect on the base.
Yes.
Where he's got like the gold, like he hasn't just painted the base rim black. He's actually continued that marble effect. It looks really cool. Really looks like the marbly stuff you see in the films.
Yeah.
Right. Marble.
Marvelous.
No, not Marvel films. Lord of the Rings, Hobbit films.
I'm gonna do that again. Marvelous
you
work.
Scumbags.
third Master place
opinion on the model.
Yeah. Oh, we made him mute himself. He's done. Let's look at third place at the Monster Mash. It was Daniel Donovan bringing seven whole models. He's got the Balrog, Cave Drake with two Warg Marauders, Moria Goblin model, one Batswarm, and a second Cave Drake. And because our kind sponsors, Tabletop Admiral, don't let you make illegal lists, I couldn't add his monster, so I've showed it on screen. He had a Troll Brute.
I was going to say, 100 points down, that's really, really strong, but it was a Troll Brute as well.
It really makes me very happy that someone took what Tom actually wanted to the event, which was just like a crazy monster list, and did really well with it. So shout out, Daniel, well done.
Well,
that's not a slight at anybody who didn't.
The rules pack very much incentivized the opposite of that. The rules pack was like, make some nonsense combo, please.
Yeah, and that's what I would have done at the event. I would have done the nonsense combo. I'm not saying I'm above that. I'm just saying it's nice to see someone took this wild list.
Shout out to this one Goblin Warrior as well.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, all of the monsters count as banners.
Yes, all monsters counted as banners.
Yeah, so they're all banners to themselves as well. So
it does make them a bit better, yeah.
Yeah, they're all getting the rerolls. Like,
suddenly the
probably
Baron's getting
up
that
the
fifth
most
dice.
Things.
Yeah.
Baron
Yeah,
doesn't even
probably...
have heroic strike. What an idiot.
I would
as
have
long as
loved
you can
to have
roll well,
seen,
it does bits.
like, one goblin captain, 10, or well, I guess 9 cave trolls, and then the troll brute just, like, leading them as a bigger cave troll.
I like that.
All as a banner.
There's not a lot we can say about this list, because, unfortunately, it's a very off-standard list.
And you'll get
really ruin
massive
our podium
points.
No, because
yeah,
it's
a big chat
points. Doesn't go in the podium stats, though.
Oh, yeah, this is an 80, so we'll see.
Oh, sorry. No, it was an 80.
No, it's irrelevant.
No,
it's
an
80. It doesn't matter.
Actually, I do need to double check. I think I might have added it to the stats, so I'm going to have to go back and remove them.
Oh, no, it wasn't 80. Cool. My apologies.
Big,
as ranking officer,
Chad
I should know
points
that.
To Daniel for using the troll brute.
Troll brutes are funky and fun to use.
Second place list. Sponsors, Tabletop Admiral, actually let me... create this list in full. So he was Erebor Reclaimed and the Misty Mountains. He had Thorin Oakenshield on Goat with Orcris, leading 10 Iron Hills Dwarfs with Spear, 2 Dwarfs with Crossbow, 2 Dwarfs with Crossbow and Spear, and a Goat Rider. Then he had Dane on his Warboar, leading 9 Dwarfs with Spear, 1 Dwarf with Banner and Spear, 2 Dwarfs with Crossbow, 2 Dwarfs with Crossbow and Spear, and another Goat Rider. And then my second favourite Flappy Boy, Gwahir.
That's a familiar model. Got one of those right here.
Hey.
Oh, there he is. That's funky. I like that he's got a reroll on all his warbands.
I was going to say that,
This is essentially pure, because the monster doesn't count, so this is essentially pure Erebor Reclaimed. Thorin gets a reroll for himself. Dane's got a banner for backup, and then Gwahir's a monster, so Gwahir's going to be rerolling for himself as well, which is pretty cool. I think this is a very sensible list. Low in numbers, but that's a trifecta of very killy troops. Very killy heroes, sorry. Day 9 Foot Lord of the Iron Hills and Thorin Oakenshield, King of the Mountain, both mounted, is a particular favourite combo of mine. I use them at 1,000 points, those two, Biffa and Galadriel. And they really cover each other's base as well. They're both extremely beefy, very effective. The thing that really makes it work is Dane has March, which means that you don't have to compromise your combo for bringing in a captain so that you can go faster. You can just be like, right, I'm going to go brr and also go faster.
Pump those dwarven legs, boys.
It's also like, it's a list that doesn't seem to take the piss with the rules of the tournament as well. Like, it's just like, you would expect to see dwarves and Gwahir. Like, not saying Iron Hills dwarves, but like, you'd see dwarves and Gwahir before, therefore, like, it's like a fairly standardized list.
Well, it's a solid 700 point list with Gwahir thrown on top, but also you don't have to compromise any of your stuff because Gwahir's there. You know, you essentially get the green lines. This is a tangent, but I do wonder if maybe Dane has March because in the movie he sort of arrives from the Iron Hills in about half an hour. Thorin like sends word to Dane, and then the next day the entire army shows up, and you're like, what? How did that happen? One of those little moments. Because they did a heroic march. That's what happened.
Does make sense. And it also explains why when he gets to the battle, he doesn't actually really do much because he's out of might.
Yeah. It's true.
Gets DP'd.
He's like, oh, you're going to go kill Azog, are you? Have fun.
Yeah, get on with
if
it.
If you
king.
Die, I will inherit your title as king. So
smart. I think this is actually just a decent 850 list that got made better slightly by the rules. I think this is good shit.
Yeah. Shout out, Sean. We were actually chatting the other day. So
I see him. He posts in the Guardian Discord, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He does. He's done regular.
Doesn't
Let's
get in the
voice
chat, so I forget that he's
winning
there,
list.
He's the regular chat.
Yeah.
Go on then.
So our winner was Dan Watkins, bringing Rise of the Necromancer Legendary Legion. So the Necromancer, the Witch King, Kamul, Lingering Shadow, the Forsaken, 2 Abyssal Knights, and then in a definitely not kind of fluff crime, bringing Gwahir alongside him. What do we think of this one?
Very
Invisible
funny.
Gwahir.
What a whack combo. I love it. That's just bonkers. I don't know why you'd think to do that as well. I think it's great. What do we know what scenarios they played?
I
know one of them was Contest of Champions. That's all I know.
Seize the Prize was third round, Contest was second round, and Command the Battlefield was
Command the Battlefield. Round. How the hell do you win that? I remember if it was against a list that had even, maybe it was against Smaug or something at Command the Battlefield, because I have no idea how you'd win with eight models. But what a
I'll
legend.
Tell you how. He was playing against, oh, actually, what was he playing against?
Let's look at this.
He was playing against Breaking of the Fellowship with the Barrel.
Oh. Well, he just like followed them out of
the real the real Balrog was the friends we made along the way.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, hang on, which one didn't he take? Sorry, that list interests me immediately. 850, he must have not taken someone.
Necromancer, Nazgul.
I was talking about that one you just mentioned, because Breaking the Fellowship is...
I reckon Pippin.
Sorry, I think he took all the hobbits.
Crossbows.
We'll talk about the one we're looking at. I like the Forsaken. I think Abyssalmites are cheeky, but also not that good. Maybe. I don't really know. I think a Slayer of Men is probably marginally better than Kamul, because Kamul doesn't have a single-handed weapon. He doesn't have Burly. He does have three attacks, but he's always using the minus one. I think Slayer of Men are better. Abyssal Knights are particularly fun in stuff like Seize the Prize, because you can, like, if you pick up on one of them, you can send the other one towards the board edge and run away backwards with your main one, essentially. And then they just snap towards each other. One of them can just join the other one in the priority phase for free, which is crazy good. But then again, if you're playing Seize the Prize with a wizard who can cast twice and Gwaihir, it's like, I mean, why wouldn't you just use Gwaihir?
In this list, I really don't like Kamul. I think he's one of the ones that goes down easiest quite early on, because he is more likely to lose the fights. I mean, these things are killing anyway, usually. I would have taken a Slayer of Men instead of Kamul, personally. I think... also, the paired teleporty Abyssal Knights are really good for objective play. Like, really good.
Well, I wouldn't say really good. I think they're probably worse than taking two Slayers of Men on balance, but in the monsters gameplay as well. The main thing for me that they have is the elven made weapon.
I would have been tempted to drop Kamul and the Forsaken for two Slayers of Men. I think
the Forsaken mathematically is better than a Slayer of Men. I think that's actually true, because rerolling to wound is actually better than plus one. I think technically,
yes, unless you're wounding on sixes, I think.
I think when you get to like the sixes by sixes kind of region, I think plus one is better. But
Stephen, use your maths degree. How does this work?
Okay, I'm telling you, because I've looked at it before. Right. When you get to sixes, it's worse. Anyway, let's move on.
We go too far down the rabbit hole. I've very quickly on the fly adjusted the statistics to remove the egregious Monster Mash 80 point results that the intern accidentally get left into the graph. So that's without any further ado, I don't know what the count is now. These are our GBHL 100 in blue and GBHL 90 podium results for the year. So for our Spotify listeners, leading the pack for hundreds, we've got Isengard and Riders of Theoden with three podiums apiece, and then a smattering of armies with 100 podium apiece. We've got Army of Lake Town, Dragon Emperor, Dunland, Beornings, Dark Denizens, Far Harad, Goblin Town, Grand Army of the South, Halls of Thranduil, Survivors of Lake Town, Black Riders, Theodred's Guard, Varings of Cand. And then leading the pack for 90s, we've got Army of Lake Town with 490 podiums, giving them five podiums in total that we count. Dragon Emperor is on two podiums at 90s, Minas Tirith on three podiums, and then a smattering of lists on two podiums: Angmar, Assault on Lothlorien, Azog's Hunters, Depths of Moria, Legendary Legion, Lothlorien, Serpent Horde, Thorin's Company, with a decent sized handful of lists on one single 90 podium: Arnor, Assault upon Helm's Deep, Azog's Legion, Kirith Ungol, Defenders of Erebor, Erebor Reclaimed, Fell Beings, Mordor, Numenor, Rivendell, Army of Dale, Fiefdoms, Men of the West, Misty Mountains, and Vanquishers of the Necromancer.
Okay.
There's some stats.
Where's the Mordor and Serpent Horde in the hundreds?
That's what I was thinking. There. The feared I mean, it will turn up because we're about to have a lot of 700 and 800
well, I mean,
point tournaments.
This is the first time. This is the first 100. Well, no, I guess I don't think it's quite so good in Good v Evil. It's good, but it doesn't do its business as well against armies.
It's evil, Dave. That's the point of it.
So what hundreds have we had so far? We've had Warhammer World, Into the West, GP and
600 and 450 don't count for anything essentially for that list because it doesn't function at those points levels.
Yeah.
700 does function very well. But as I was just saying, in Good v Evil, it doesn't it fights better against some of the more common evil factions. Like it doesn't like elves that much. I've heard the argument that Rise of Théoden's good into it. I'm not 100% convinced, but maybe that is the case. I've certainly never struggled too much against Rise of Théoden with it, but people tell me that they think it's a good counter.
Well, it's definitely kind of probably the biggest target and villain that people, especially around kind of the 700 points that people are thinking about when they're trying to think, oh, what list do I need to counter?
Well,
but I think that's why.
Maybe,
I mean, we've seen,
maybe that's changing. Looking at this,
yeah, potentially.
I mean, Isengard, pure Isengard winning is, I see that as an extension of Assault on Helm's Deep from last year more than anything.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially just doing what that list was doing in the new world order, where you're just prioritizing the crossbows more, prioritizing slightly more effective heroes and slightly more effective pieces like Warg Riders and Crabanes and stuff like Gorlf, stuff like Vrasku makes it all that little bit stronger. Like Vrasku can't be underestimated. It can't be overstated how much better he makes the level of shooting that the crossbows can bring, even like versus like, you know, the one captain with crossbow you might bring from Helm's Deep if you were doing that. It's just so much stronger. Like shooting twice, shooting on, hitting on threes with the crossbow is extreme.
Yeah,
and so might points can
work accuracy as well against defense four back lines is also
exactly. Yeah, you can be like, if, for example, say your opponent had a Dragon Knight and they put him in the second rank, you could be like, right, accuracy with Vrasku, everyone shooting that Dragon Knight, and if you kill him, you know, it takes away half the points value.
It is a very clear example of can we get Assault on Helm's Deep? We've got Assault on Helm's Deep at home, but it's better.
Yeah, that doesn't really work for that reason, to be honest. Because it's just, I wouldn't say it's better. It's not as good as Assault on Helm's Deep was at its peak, because that was extreme.
Yeah, it was oppressive.
Because rerolling ballistas is horrible. Ballistas were still good, but it's pretty telling that there were multiple lists Isengard there, and the one without the ballistas is the one that won.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty clear that we're in the with the crossbows world now.
It is nice to see a big spread of different lists that are podiuming hundreds now.
That was, to be fair, that was the case before, I feel, as well. Like, it's just certain things went through little phases of being very popular. Like towards the end of the year, Mordor Serpent Horde was popular. Earlier in the year, Assault on Lothlorien and Assault on Helm's Deep were very popular, and Army of Lake Town had a large presence, even if it wasn't being seen on the podiums quite yet.
Is that not all the meta is, though? What's popular? What's the flavor of the month?
People see it doing well,
and they take it themselves, and it does more well because of the snowballing effect of more people taking it.
Yeah.
And then people counter it with other things, and that becomes a new meta.
That is basically the definition of competitive meta, yes.
I thought so.
Yeah. Thank you for defining it. You've literally defined the meta there. In a way that Dave Farmer did do for about a year and a half, where he did literally define the meta.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So I guess the takeaway going forward, Dave's told us already, is take Blinding Light to your tournaments at the moment. That's the secret sauce.
Don't take it now, because everyone's going to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's have a look at everybody's
favorite. Loads of armies with no shooting, both Blinding Lighting against each other, would be something I'd love to see.
let's move on to everyone's favorite part of the show, mainly the viewers' favorite part, questions and comments.
Is it not your favorite part, John?
My favorite part is all the ridiculous amount of YouTube money we make by our kind viewers. staying to this point in the show. Yeah.
Dave's just walked to get his pay packet. He's back.
This red thing is actually the finest silk you can afford. So
yeah, paid for by the YouTube money and the new sponsorship from Firestorm Games. Link down below. Our first comment is from Alexander Anglin 9447. He says, I play fiefdoms almost exclusively for my good army because I just absolutely love them. I love that some are finally podiumed with a wall of foot knights, as those models have the greatest drip of all warriors in the game, in my opinion. Though I do wish they were 1 point cheaper on foot. It hurts to see them at 11 points when Fountain Court Guard and Black Numbs exist to fill similar roles, but the other two are way more efficient. If you can make a change of points on warrior profiles, which ones would you change and how?
This is an interesting one because there's a lot of profiles that are sort of awkward. Not necessarily bad points, but their comparison with other things makes them sad. Mm-hmm. Just starting with Gondor for a start, I mean, Axemen of Lozanark need a special rule to make them worth taking over the pikemen. Like they're okay, but like if they get some extra bonus for being near four long or something, like a strength four, if they're within three or four long, I think that would be a cool bonus.
I'd increase the points cost of Hunter Orcs personally.
Well, I'd lower it on Black Shield, Moria Goblins.
Yeah,
they are.
I'd love to have a D6 front line, but you just cannot justify 8 points for one of those.
Black Shields got gimped in the new edition, unfortunately. They used to be strength four. They went up in points, and they used to be 7 points with shields at strength four. They were so good.
I don't want to be strength three.
What nonsense would you change?
What nonsense would I change? Most of the armies I play are not too bad. I think I'd like a little reduction for Mirkwood Rangers, perhaps.
That's a good shout.
And very expensive.
I think the saddest profiles are always the ones that are like just objectively worse. Like Citadel Guard next to him, Fountain Court. It's like their niche is totally taken by Fountain Court.
I would either give
them a War Spear so that when they're mounted, they have a little niche. That'd be cool.
I would either make Goblin Town Goblins 3 points each, or give them a bow for 1 point. Let them take bows.
They do have bows in the movie.
I know.
This is why you're the intern, John.
Moving on from the nonsense.
Then I could take like 75 goblins at 650 and have 25 bows.
I was half expecting you to say like make Easterling warriors a point cheaper or something.
I fucking hate Dragon Emperor. That's why I'm selling it to Steven and
Peyton. Make black dragons actually give you points back.
Our next question/comment is from Pingwix. Thoughts on Radiant Eagle, 3 dice minimum with the Hedgehog, a few cheeky immobilizers, channel terrifying aura, the easy counter charge control and resistance to magic on the whole lot, not to mention healing the bird. I've taken Radiant Eagle to an event back when Super Friends, so that's Lake Town Soup, was still a thing, took Raddy and a bunch of Lake Towners, and he's really good. He's decent on Eagle. You have to be careful how you use him because he's a 200 point model without strike.
But
205 a lot of
fun to use. With Sebastian.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Sebastian for 5 points is probably the best upgrade for 5 points in the whole game. Even better than the one might upgrade on ring rates for five points.
Yeah, plus one attack is great.
Plus one attack is insanely good.
Yeah.
For 5 points. Even though, I would
question the staff of power there.
Well, yeah, like that's the thing.
Staff of power is a big thing.
It is. So when you say like the terror support, for me, I don't think that's worth doing. John and I discussed this at length last year when I don't think so either. Like, for me, your best bets are 1 dice panic steeding important heroes, because it's a great spell and you can cast it on 2+. Immobilizing key things before you swoop in with your fight 7 eagle and smash them. Occasionally renewing if you absolutely need to. But yeah, I don't think the terror is that. Oh, and Nature's Wrath can also be valuable.
I was going to say, carpet bombing with Nature's Wrath sounds really fun. You can't actually cast when you're directly over a model, though, can you? Is that right?
No, you have to be able to land.
I think you have to be able to land to be able to cast you're cast.
I don't think that's true. I'm not quite sure about with Nature's Wrath, but you can definitely cast as part of your movement.
Yeah, you can do it as part of your movement, but you pause your movement, don't you?
No, you don't. You don't have to be able to land to do anything as part of your flight.
I think they FAQ'd it, but please let us know in the comments below.
Well, I'll check that.
If Dave's wrong,
wasn't the case.
He loses his competitive legitimacy. So it's a big call. Our next question is from Curtis Hodgson. What's Curtis's event?
Great battle of our time. Yeah,
Jibu, famously the nicest player in the league.
No, I mean, he's talking about Battle of Borodur here, though, because that was the one we talked about last week, where he co-TO'd with Sam Palmer.
Yeah. The Balrog player won most sporting. He was also one lucky shielding orc away from winning Divide and Conquer, with the Balrog being the only remaining model in the middle. So this was, in reference to anyone that missed last week's episode, a 350-point escalation event where some Chad brought just the Balrog as his 350-point list. So shout out to Curtis for letting us know that info, and shout out to the Chad that brought the Balrog. Next, we've got Robert Stevens saying, great podcast as always. Question, if you could change one thing on a character profile, what would it be? He would give Amda the Mighty Hero rule set, provides more options than Take the Dragon Emperor.
Stop giving Easterlings things.
I mean, no, Amda is a good shout, because Amda is just...
He's just running with the Dragon Emperor anyway.
Yes, I think just take both.
Give Amda a master forged hand and a half sword. Make it a master forged hand and a half. I think that instead of...
Let's leave that faction alone.
Yeah. My change would be, surprising no one, giving Elrond expert rider.
I mean
that as well, but we've already done this question before, and Elrond expert rider is more relevant to the lore.
I always thought that the Knights of Dol Amroth Imrahil should have expert rider as well.
Yes, they should.
But also I understand they kind of wanted to make it like a, I don't know, because Rivendell Knights and Rohan both have it anyway. Right, it feels like it's only on troops that come with bows.
If I had free reign, I'd give the Watcher 6 might, but that's just me.
Yeah,
no, Gunnar gets a 2+.
No, she just needs strike. Strike's irrelevant.
Give Mardin heroic strike.
Oh, yes.
Mardin gang rise up.
He fights trolls.
Mardin gang rise up.
Fight 7 Mardin versus trolls.
Right, before the Mardin cult starts, let's go to the next question. Stuart McLean, friend of the pod, asks, best list and points level for Gandalf the White to be his most optimal?
None.
2,000 points?
Anything over 800.
None that you're playing.
He's usable over 800.
I would say, yeah, at 800, he becomes very niche. At 1,000, he's playable, but he's always difficult to fit. Even at 1,000, it's hard to get your points value from him.
If you're not against magical big heroes, you will suffer.
Yeah, it doesn't work below 800, I don't think.
Ads 157 says, hi from Australia. With the Witch King and other magic being popular, what's a good way for Rise of Theoden to deal with it, and also Fell Beasts? So I think we cover this on last week's episode? we had a similar question, I think, on last week's pod, which we
did,
covered.
But
Dave gave some very good advice.
The short version is, Witch King, basically be careful charging him if he's charged, because that means he gets a big knockdown. Monstrous Cav is, or like monsters with monstrous charge are always a bit scarier with cavalry, but it can be done. I think picking a target and strike combating off of that, once you know you're a higher fight value, attacking him once you know you're in a good position to do so, like if he's not charged, is a good start. Yeah, it's difficult, but he only starts 5 value 5, so your heroes are striking up on an equal footing.
If he gets isolated and then there's a 50-50 on pouncing on him and trapping him, he will suffer. So the thing about the Fell Beast Witch King is that you have to treat it like a really careful scalpel, in that if you chuck him in the middle of your enemies, he might kill a lot of stuff, or you might just throw away your 200-point leader.
Yeah. And if it's only the Witch King anyway, I think by the time you've gone to combat and had a round of death, the game's pretty much gone anyway.
If he's held down your line, that's an issue. If you can charge him with one or two Rohan Royal Guard to stop him from Hurric combating off, maybe three Rohan Royal Guard.
Yeah.
Chuck an Aemirin and Hurric Strength.
Yeah.
Or waiting to pull the trigger on that first charge until your opponent has priority, so your opponent's moved, and then be reactive if you can.
Exactly.
Or just Elf Helm throw and spear him off the top anyway.
Yeah, sure.
The real question, though, is just for our audio listeners, is that Dave has been leaning forward for quite a while. He's obviously munching on something that tastes good. Dave, what are you eating?
I'm eating spaghetti and sausages. that might help.
Having your dinner straight out is very, very Gollum's game. As
well, yeah, at least he knew
you guys had
mic,
to have
though.
It. You guys had to have it early, so.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll blame the intern.
It was that or literally leave my food for like half an hour and let it go cold. So I was like, no, I'm going to eat it actually.
So Grandpa Gabe asks, the level of hobby at the GT this year was insane. He was also surprised by the lack of Dragon Emperors and Witch Kings lurking about.
I think this is a very interesting point. I think part of it is that Emperor players who go to the GT might be less meta oriented. They might be slightly newer to the game. Or they might just be doing it because they want to paint a cool army and take something cool.
What I would say as well is the sort of, yeah, if you're just there for competitive, there are better value tournaments out there than the Warhammer World GT. Part of it is the grand day out aspect of it. It's a £70 ticket, which is, you know, it's nice with lunch included and everything, but that is significantly more than equivalent GBHL 100s. So yeah. If you're just going for competitive reasons, there has to be something extra, you know?
Yeah.
And the novelty.
Dragon Emperor won it, so... You know,
the novelty of Warhammer World is enough extra for some people. This was one of my, I think, third ever tournament last year. I fucking loved it. Like,
the GT's
Ali
really
doesn't
good.
Like it when we swear. Yeah. Sorry, Ali. It was very good.
Sorry, Ali.
Our next question/comment is a triple comment from our number one fan.
Shout out Lian Smith. Shout out Lian Smith.
GT was an awesome, great weekend of gaming. No any heroics team there, though. Very sad. We apologize. I wanted to go, but I couldn't get a ticket. Sign up to our upcoming Patreon to help us fund ticket sales. Yeah.
More importantly, the ticket sales are quite difficult to know when they're coming out.
Even when they do, the website always just freezes.
Yeah. Eventbrite just goes, bye.
Lian also says, when will we get all of any heroics team on the podcast at the same time? We've pretty much got that now. We're just missing Josh. But if you squint, imagine Dave a bit shorter with a full head of hair and liking Minas Tirith more. You can pretend he's Josh. And
no, Dave loves Minas Tirith.
Yeah, Dave likes Minas Tirith. Don't badmouth him like that.
And finally, Lian says, love how Stephen looked like he was hot off the back of a Rome at Senate meeting the whole time.
That's actually my job. I travel back in time to the Roman Senate. Although actually my robe should be purple because I am obviously from the the high.
You're a consul, are you?
I am a consul.
David J, probably not friend of the pod, considering who this person actually is, asks, does Big Bill Champs have a hope in hell of hitting the GBHL podium this year using Moria, or is he four hobbits short of a bushel?
Who's David J?
Is that written in code?
I think this might be the mystery GBHL Bugle writer.
Interesting.
I don't think
to answer his question, whoever this is, I don't think Will Champion is gonna hit the podium just because he runs too many events and can't go to enough of them. I think he's a great player, and I think if he was able to compete on the same level that I did last year, for example, going to like 20 GBHL 100s, I think he probably would podium in the league.
Yeah.
But I'm also, it might happen. I just think that at the moment, it's going to be tough because he hosts.
Also,
he is
hosting 300s this year.
Yeah,
300 tournaments.
That's one every day almost.
or to clarify, he is hosting at least two and potentially the GBHL finale. Although that one is technically hosted by the GBHL committee team, me and John, and obviously the other nine.
Brexit means Brexit, Stephen. It's final.
To answer your question, if you mean GBHL podium, as in the final end of year podium, it's doable, right? For someone like Will, who is that good, yes. But with tournaments, yeah, he'll do it.
Yeah.
He'll podium 100.
The person who I think it is, I apologize for being rude. If it is the person who I think it is, deal with it. our next question is another fantastic suggestion that we're definitely planning on stealing. You should make some YouTube shorts called Heroic Icks, where you list off icks that some heroes have. Market research shows the younger generation responds positively.
That's the Gollum's game, is then.
Or read words they find fun to use. you can be busting into a currently untapped market for MESPG. And then Carsonal also says we should do it at tournaments. So I think we should, rather than talking about our heroic
for those, nine younger listeners that are members of the Golems game, we will do this for you.
These Ali's older than me, for God's sake. These comments, Carson, were very inspiring for us. We had a long conversation in the chat when we first saw this, talking about the idea and how we possibly would be doing some quick fire short tournament. Was it like we were thinking maybe a tournament report, something like that?
Yeah.
A great idea.
We keep starting to film tournament vlogs, getting caught up in the tournament, and then just not finishing it off. But that's tournament shorts,
pick up
we're like right at the start. We're like, Stephen, what are you taking, Gil-galad? Dave, what are you taking, Minas Tirith, etc. And then we do like an end thing.
I'm just imagining us throughout the day as well.
Smash cuts.
Smash cuts
after the game. Like, Elliot, what happened? Modern died. Oh,
Elliot, what happened? Whoa, we went on Elfham's throwing spear.
Modern died again.
Right, our next comment is from that original orc saying that Smaug is utterly insane. So I'd like to give a shout out to that original orc because your stuff
Instagram
is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's a terrified of Smaug.
I was very excited to see this comment because I've been following this guy's Instagram for a while, and I'm happy that he follows us because big fan, big fan. If you check out loads of it's amazing stuff. Lots of converted. It's like my favorite thing in the game in hobby is like making models, different poses, like custom. This guy's whole thing is like picking orcs from like crowd shots and then bringing them to life, like extra orcs. It's so cool.
I'll put a link in his Instagram to his Instagram in the description.
Put a link in his Instagram to our channel. Come back in.
Even though we're not sponsored by that original orc, his stuff is so good that I will happily shill.
Shout out for free.
Our next the only JP one asks, how do I get the intern to paint me an army?
Sorry, did you screen wrap that from 0 seconds ago?
John, don't do that.
I don't. You get the intern to paint you an army by letting him meta chase so hard that he hates one of the armies he's done, and then he also doesn't like his paint scheme for it, but also love his paint scheme for it. That's how.
Yeah. Do you want an event with an army that shouldn't do well? Convince him it's worth taking, and then you get it for free.
Yeah. Don't you put the effort in? Just wait a month, buy it off him.
Yeah. Maybe he'll do paid commissions in the future. Who knows?
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Comment down below if you want me to.
Yeah. Comment and he'll take a screenshot 0 seconds later.
Who, John? Yeah. What? To paint what?
Anyway.
Paint an army or something.
I'm worthy of Mordor.
Our final comment of the week comes from Seth Clark, who's replying to us. Replying to his comment from the last episode, saying happy to be doxxed. He's in the Surrey area, so I guess close-ish to London. Not entirely sure what's a good spot to get local games in, but we'll keep an eye out for tournaments. If I see any of you, I'll definitely say hi. So you're in my region. I'm the southeast of England GBHL regional rep, so there's a decent tournament scene that happens in London. I think based around the London Wargaming Guild, they've got an MESBG. Is that right, Dave?
London Wargaming Guild is a
group chat, don't they?
It's a massive umbrella organization for all kind of wargaming, but there is a there is an SBG chat which is very active to the point where it's definitely you need to keep that shit muted because it's extreme. But I dip into it from time to time. They're a good bunch of lads. They mostly play in Badman Cafe, which is in Borough in South London. That's probably not the best place for you, I would have thought. Yeah. But it's definitely an option.
Surrey is kind of closer
south of London.
Yeah, south of London. There's games in Havant in near Portsmouth. I know they run some tournaments. There's an upcoming tournament, I think, in Newbury.
Reading is relatively active as well. There's the Wargamers Association of Reading.
I think the best thing to do is go onto the Great British Hobbit League website. Look at the events calendar, see what events are coming up near you, and just start going to events. Like, it's how I met, kind of. I knew Stephen from school, but all the rest of the lads I just met through tournaments. All of my kind of friends in the hobby are kind of scattered all over the country, and it's all just through meeting at tournaments. Like, it's the best thing about tournaments. Winning's nice, not that I'd know, But the best thing about tournaments is the social and that community that you just get to instantly be a part of because we're all playing toy soldiers together.
So not only throughout the country, but throughout Europe as well, because obviously we've got Chris Lewis, we've got Louis Van Heck, we've got people in Ireland. So we do actually have one last comment sent through anonymously. I couldn't possibly tell you who's actually sent this comment through, but it is a podcast review from a man who...
It's coming.
Definitely tastes a lot like gravy and might run...
Sure, Elliot had something to say.
No, I think
Elliot had something to say. Don't worry,
nothing
Elliot.
At all, mate.
John...
So this is some live editing on the fly here.
From Mr. Clavid Dubley, or was it Ham Dawkins? I'm not entirely sure. Regarding a review of last week's podcast, giving heroic points and golems points. Not sure why golems points. I'm not sure that's relevant. Jobby, heroics points, doing proper hobbying. Well done. Asking me what I'm wearing. Correct. You got the army hood bonus right. Shout out to Liam Smith. Outrulesing farmer on Stompy and a bonus pun. Gom's point for being mean to Josh. Farmer plus two, heroics points, getting the Mahood bonus right, attempting the Polish name, dig at John, calling someone a good guy, no idea who this could possibly be. Golem's points, playing the game before the GBHL, false, there wasn't a game before the GBHL. Agreed, there wasn't, no such thing. And also getting Stompy's strength hit wrong. Dodgy Demby, that's me, minus 1 point, heroics points, one for firing shots at John, two for shout out to David Clubby, brother called James, and Fiefdom's love, Golem's points, not knowing Mirkwood had no Baron model, correcting people's grammar, excuse you, that's all I do, getting them a hood bonus wrong, and claiming I'm better than Luke the Suit Hilda. I mean, the truth, unfortunately, sorry. Now, here at the meat of the comment.
Oh no, there's technical difficulties. We'll have to cut the pod here.
My favourite thing about this is the corrected people's grammar. Sad to see fewer of this, please. That's the best comment.
He obviously did do that on purpose, I hope. Otherwise, I will turn to his house.
That's beautiful. Whoever this is.
This person is famously illiterate, though.
Yes. One of the worst journalists in the GBHL, but also the only journalist.
I was going to say one of the best as well by default, surely.
I also knew when I got a review finally, I would win it. I'm right. So this means, well, it's like, I can't, podiums now matter nothing for me in the GBHL. This is, I've peaked. This is great. Yeah.
John, are you suitably flustered now?
I'm never flustered. I'm inflappable.
Because I was specifically asked to ambush you. So I've now done so. I've done my duty. Sorry for the last 3 minutes of the podcast. This has been a mess that I made happen. I take full responsibility for my actions and I will be standing down as a podcast editor for any future podcasts, but I wanted to do it, so I did it. Cheeky little wrap up, having ruined the credibility of the podcast. Remember to comment, like, share, subscribe, support your hobby. Go check out Firestorm Games if you're ever in the Cardiff or Bristol area. Definitely worth the trip over. Remember to buy your stuff from there. Link in the description.
Well, if you're in Cardiff, you're already there. So if you're in Bristol, it's worth the trip over.
That's what I was saying. Sorry. We'll catch you on the next one. Chitter, chitter.
Chitter, chitter.
Chitter, chitter. We actually have sponsors.
We actually do.
We've had a sponsor for the last year.